I am Platt on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Elizabeth Bashinsky joins me now. She's just published her fifth collection of poetry, The Hottest Summer in Recorded History. It's described as a collection that showcases the poet's signature eye for irony and sensuality, with a balance of youthful playfulness and observational maturity. The poems herein are fun, also sharp and truthful. It's fun getting to know the poet through their work, and I'll ask Ms. Bashinsky how much of her is in a book like this, and whether it matters how one reads it. Her previous collections include Curio, Home of Sudden Service, God of Misconnections, and I Don't Feel So Good. She's been nominated for several awards, including the Governor General's Award for Poetry, the Pat Lowther Award, and the Cobzar Literary Award. She's the editor of Event Magazine and teaches creative writing at Douglas College. Her website can be found at elizabethbashinsky.blogspot.ca. This collection is published by Knightwood Editions. Please welcome to the Platt on the Line program, in studio, as it were, Elizabeth Bashinsky. Ms. Bashinsky, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming in to do this.
I'm really happy to be here. It's a pleasure.
You know, I should have asked you before we started, is it Bashinsky or Bachinsky?
Bachinsky, hard C-H.
Bachinsky.
Yeah.
I apologize for screwing that up in
That's
the intro.
That's all right.
The book launched this past weekend, and I understand that you're going on tour.
Yeah, I'm going on a little tour with Amber Dawn, local Vancouver author and activist Amber Dawn. Her book is called How Poetry Saved My Life, and we'll be on tour for about a week together. We're going to go to Montreal, Toronto, and Guelph.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I guess you'll see Mr. Miller and Brad Cran will be there as well in Toronto?
Yeah, that's right. I'm doing two events in Toronto. We're doing the first event at Glad Day Bookstore,
yeah,
and then the second one is at Supermarket with Jay and Brad. Yeah, yeah. Jay Millar and Brad Cran.
What's that like to showcase your work? I mean, I would assume that writing poetry is a very solitary experience. You know, you're locked away with your book or your computer or your notepaper, and then to have it now published and to read from it, to talk about it. I mean, what's that like?
Well, this book in particular was not very solitary because okay. Most of the poems are written for friends about, you know, fun times we've had together. They're really intimate poems about good times, debauchery. So it involved some debauchery to arrive at the poems. And so, I don't know, they just seemed like a real pleasure to write. And those moments that I get to have by myself to actually write the poetry is kind of delightful, you know? I'm a really busy person, and yeah, I really cherish those moments where I get to actually be alone and write. So
most of the poems in the book have a dedication to, so it's for someone.
That's right.
How does that work? Do they inspire you when you start, or did you write something and say, yeah, this is for so-and-so?
I think a little bit of both. You know, there were definitely poems that I wrote because I had an interesting conversation with someone. You know, I remember talking to Donato Mancini at 1 o'clock in the morning, one morning at a party, and just what he was talking about really was interesting to me. So, you know, I ran on home and wrote a poem about what we'd been talking about. So that kind of thing happens. And then sometimes I'll have written a poem and I'll just think, you know, I think this one would really should belong to Jamila Hagen up in the Yukon. You know, it just feels like her, yeah, like gifts I want to give to friends.
And so do you hear back from them at all?
Yeah, I do for sure.
And what's that like?
It's really nice. Yeah, it's great. It really is about starting a conversation, not only with that person, but with a larger audience as well, you know? I feel like if I'm writing to someone in particular, it means that the voice is going to be authentic, I'm not going to be telling any lies, I'm going to be encouraging that kind of intimate situation with a reader.
Yeah.
So that's really important to me. You know, poets like Frank O'Hara would do that as well, you know, create that sense of intimacy with a reader. Yeah, so thinking about those poets and hopefully pleasing them with the poems, you know, that
is,
works.
Is how one reads the book, does that matter? And I'm reading this book, I read this book of yours, trying to get to know you, I guess. Because, I mean, I've heard of you. I don't really know what's going on in your head. And so I'm thinking, is this a way in, do you think?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's a very particular way in, mm-hmm. you know. The mode of writing poetry for me is a very specific place that I go to intellectually, I suppose. there's the aspect of a game to a lot of my writing. A lot of the writing is formal, so it has a sort of, I would say, obsessive quality to it that perhaps my personality doesn't necessarily have. I think I'm a lot more laid back than my poetry is. And of course, you know, you get the distilled moments that happen in these poems that are much more dense than, you know, just meeting me. And also, I think a lot of people are surprised, you know, they read the poetry and they're kind of like, it's a bit, I don't know what the word is, like maybe like edgy. Yeah. And then I tend to be a very warm person in person.
Yeah that's so, what I've noticed, sure.
So they're kind of a little bit like, there's that incongruity between the personality and then the art that I make.
You say that you go to a different place when you're writing poetry. So, I mean, I'm assuming it's a different place if you're writing, say, fiction or other fiction or nonfiction.
That is true. Yeah. Poetry is totally a different. It's more akin to writing song lyrics or, just something that's much more dense, musical. Even it's a little bit more like screenwriting where you're dealing exclusively with imagery.
Yeah.
And dialogue, and it's very, voice is very important. You know, there are just different aspects of poetry that are not in prose.
There's some poems in the book, and I forgot to count, four or five, that are, I would assume, transcripts of instant message conversations, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, there is art, there is poetry in a Facebook status update or a tweet, right?
Absolutely. I love that IM that runs throughout the book. That's with the poet David McGimsey in Montreal.
Yeah.
And I was on the Sunshine Coast finishing up my last book, God of Misconnections, and, you know, I was just a little bored, and we started the instant message, and I just thought it was so funny. So I just clipped it. I'll often do that. I'll just clip found material and then recycle it later, and that one's great. I love the Alice Munro porn.
Yeah,
a little bit of Canadiana there.
There you go, yeah. How do you work? Do you work with a pen and paper or computer?
I do both. I'll often start out with a pen and paper in my notebook and then work toward the computer. I try not to work on the computer right away because it's too easy to delete material, so I can lose a lot of stuff, especially in a first draft. So I do like to write longhand in the first stages of writing.
How do you deal with autocorrect or that red squiggly line underneath something that's misspelled?
I ignore it. I ignore it or I turn it off, and then I shouldn't say that. I'm also an instructor, and I encourage my students to use spell check all the time because they have terrible spelling, but, you know, I also have terrible spelling, so, it's okay. That's why we have editors and colleagues to help us work on our drafts.
Where do you think this collection has taken you? I mean, where is it? What does it represent, say, in your progression as a writer? I mean, you've been published, this is your fifth collection, but you're relatively young. You're about my age. Does this represent, say, the best, the latest?
I'm really fond of these poems.
Yeah.
You know, I really enjoy reading them out loud. A lot of the books that I've written before are much more project-based. You know, Home of Sudden Service was a book about kids growing up in the Fraser Valley of British Columbia and getting up to no good. And, you know, it was a lot about teen moms. It was a very political book. God of Missed Connections was a book about Ukrainian history in Canada. And it talked a lot. It was a very political book. It talked about Holodomor, you know, the genocide in Ukraine, the internment camp operation throughout the Canadian North. You know, so this book, it just felt like I could have fun. I just wanted to celebrate just being alive.
Yeah.
You know, and I have been so fortunate in my life as a writer. I've had the chance to travel all over this country, all over North America, read my stuff to people, make amazing friends, and I just really wanted to have this book be a part of that. Almost like myth-making, you know? Yeah. Poets like George Bowring or David McFadden, they've been doing that forever. They've been writing about each other. Susan Musgrave, you know, writing about Patrick Lane and Lorna Crozier and all the shenanigans they got up to. Well, this is my version of that, you know? This is the shenanigans of my generation and the stuff that we're thinking about and is important to us.
And it's a fun group of people, a fun community nowadays?
I find it a lot of fun, yeah. You know. Certainly the people that I am drawn to are really generous, lovely, amazing, thoughtful, brilliant writers, you know. I'm so lucky, you know. Dave McGimpsey, Nick Thran, Darren Bifford, Gillian Jerome, Brad Cran, Jay Miller, he's my publisher out in Toronto. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are amazing thinkers and community activists, so I couldn't be more lucky.
There's a poem in here that's an appreciation of Bill Bissett.
Oh, yeah!
My question was, there's a date on it. What does that mean? Is that the date that you wrote it?
That's the date that I wrote it, and it was the date... Actually, no, it wasn't the date that I wrote it. It was the date that I presented that poem at the Vancouver Queer Film Festival. Mm-hmm. I was asked to speak at a retrospective of Bill's work, and my sister and I actually made a film for Bill. Mm-hmm. It's a little animation, and so I read that poem, and I showed the film there, and so that's the day we did that.
What's it like, because in the poem you talk about having read his work growing up, what's it like to get to know someone like him? Someone that you admire. You get to go to his house and wash his dishes.
Oh, it's amazing. It's just amazing. Bill is like he's just a visionary. You know, his work is brilliant, political, edgy, tough, funny, loving, compassionate. You know, like, Bill is just all the good things a person and a writer could be, and so unusual. You know, I don't know if you've seen Bill's work on the page before, but it's phonetically spelled, you know, it looks very much like if you've ever seen a person who has dyslexia, what it looks like when they write the language the way they think it should look.
It's great for me, like, if because I read on air, I guess, if you will, so it's like spelling, like I should have phonetically spelled out your last name, say, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if that helps, you know, Bill has no rules about what language should be or what poetry should be, and I mean, what a thrill to have Bill in my life as a mentor. You know, he's amazing. He's amazing. And he's raging.
Yeah, and so it's, I mean, you're also a teacher, so you have that chance to be someone's mentor yourself, right?
Yes.
Is that fun too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you seeing good writing coming out of your classrooms?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, really good writing.
Yeah. Do you teach poetry or is it just creative writing?
I teach poetry, mostly. Yeah. I also teach a personal narrative class at Douglas College. You know, people write, it's sort of like a precursor to memoir. Uh-huh. Yeah, and they write great stuff. I mean, they write terrible stuff, too, because, of course, students are human, and they're, you know, at the beginning of their writing lives. But, man, in their time with me, I'm so proud of them. They really grow, and they do write some amazing, amazing stuff. And then they go on to get involved in the community and read their work to other people. And yeah, it's just wonderful.
I asked Jay and Brad when they were in, sitting where you are, about how poetry is taught. Mm-hmm. And whether our kids today, young readers, are being taught poetry well. One of them, I think both of them, talked about how it's insanity, how poetry is graded. That,
right.
You know, and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, what's been your experience as a teacher, as an instructor?
It's so funny you're asking me that today, because I have to go home and grade all their portfolios. Like, they just came in 5 days ago. So, yeah, it's my least favorite part of the semester. I try to grade as little as possible. I really try to get students writing for the love of it and because they're passionate about their subjects. And I'm certainly passionate about teaching it to them, you know, really... When you're teaching creative writing, you're teaching citizenship, you know, like to be a writer, to be in the position where you are privileged enough to have the time and the resources to be able to write anything and to go to school. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a great privilege. So, students need to recognize that and how lucky we all are to be in that situation. So, unfortunately, I have to grade them. I have to give them a grade, but, Yeah. But you know, in a perfect world, I wouldn't. We would just march on. And
well, what's the experience of being a teacher and being a creative person, being a writer? You don't lose anything, I guess, imparting whatever wisdom you've learned to others.
No,
it adds, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I learn from my students all the time. You know, they're smart people, and it's interesting too, like, to see how my students perceive writing. You know, sometimes I'm not convinced we are communicating. Yeah. Or they're like that what I'm saying is actually breaking into their brain. So occasionally I get this glimpse of insight into what they are seeing.
Yeah.
And then that helps me to be able to explain the craft to more students in a way that is going to make sense to them, right? Because a lot of academic jargon is not going to mean anything to them.
Yeah.
What they need is real nuts and bolts, like, you know, practice in the craft and just down to earth talking about the craft of how to make a poem.
And do you find that we're reading enough?
My students are reading enough?
Yeah, we're people in general.
No,
I mean,
no.
I feel the same. I mean, I feel I don't read enough, even though I read probably more than the average person.
Yeah, I think it's true. You know, we don't read enough. Students are not aware. They don't know where to find poetry. You know, they don't go to the library particularly.
Yeah.
You know, most people are getting their information online these days. So to actually set foot into a library and go into a poetry section, I mean, that's what changes their life. When they actually go to a place where they can see, holy smokes, there's so much out there. And then they just got to start, just wade in and, mm-hmm. and start reading stuff. Then they start to get really excited. I really don't understand those students who just say they don't read.
Yeah.
You know, how can you get better? It's like saying you want to learn how to drive, but you don't actually want to drive the car.
Do it, yeah.
Like, yeah, it makes no sense to me.
Did you always want to be a writer growing up?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was a singer and a dancer and I played the violin.
Uh-huh.
But none of those things, I was not very good at any of those things. And the one thing that I really took off with, it was writing. And I've done it since I was a little kid. So, yeah, that really is my path. I found out real early that this was the thing I wanted to do. Read, write, make books. And it's been it is a great life.
You observe very well. I mean, that's my observation, having read the book. It's not very articulate, I know. But where does that come from? I mean, you're in your early 30s, yet you write like an adult.
Oh, I'm 36. I am an adult.
Well, you don't seem like, you don't seem grown up to me. I mean, you have this, you know, without insulting you, I don't know how to say this, but I mean, it seems like, from what I've read in this book, that it comes from a very perceptive eye.
Oh, thank you.
And where does that come from? I mean, were you always like that? Were you a keen observer growing up?
I suppose that's a really hard question to answer, yeah. Because it feels like hubris to say, well, yes, I've always been a keen observer of humanity.
I've always been a great person.
Yes,
yeah.
I've always been just this way. But, you know, poetry is, like I say, it has that very particular gaze.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if we want to just give all our attention to this pair of scissors on your desk, you know, there's a lot to observe about the scissors. And you'll notice that in this room that we're sitting in, there are also like thousands of other objects, right? That if we...
It's clutter.
Oh, there's just so much stuff in here. Okay, so if we just spend the next 20 minutes thinking about these scissors and describing them and what comes to us from scissors, you know, we are going to have a lot of attention and perception given to that one object, right? So it's not that I am more perceptive than anyone else. It's that I am willing to sit down and give time to particulars.
Yeah.
And that's what the writers I really admire do. They give attention to the particulars, they slow down, and they really spend time with a thing, you know,
yeah.
Almost like a talisman, you know, that's our way in. Those scissors are our way into something else, something bigger, right? But, yeah, if you get bogged down with all the thousands of other things that are going on around you, then maybe our observational skills are not going to be so focused.
Yeah, see, I'm just thinking of that, because as I've told you and I've told other poets who've been in, that I've talked to over the years, I don't read poetry. You know, I read nonfiction, mainly history, political science stuff. And I mean, I find that I can read something quickly. I mean, I'm not a speed reader or anything like that, but I mean, I can go through a book about the National Energy Program pretty fast. But when I sit down to read your book, you do have to slow down. You do have to take the time to really read it. I mean, is that the way that one should approach poetry?
Yes. Small doses. Yeah. Small doses. You know, this book, I don't think you need to read it cover to cover. I think you can dip in and read one poem and just kind of hang out there for a while, or you can rip through the whole thing. You know, I've heard people, they've ripped through the whole thing and they're, it goes by real fast like water. I think it really depends on what works for you. It's certainly not for me to prescribe how a person consumes poetry. All is good. All is well.
How do you know what gets into a book like this? I mean, is it just the latest stuff that you've written, or is it...
This is.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I thought for sure that I wasn't writing a book, and then my husband said, oh, no, you've been writing. Yeah. And he actually went through... He's like my Alice B. Toklas. He went through my hard drive, printed everything out, and showed me, and I had this massive pile of papers.
Yeah.
And I took it all over to Main Island. You know, Jenny Farrell and her husband have a cabin over there on Main Island, and took this big pile with me, and Jen helped me sort through it and, brought it home, and then started the process of actually, you know, honing in on the pieces that I thought could belong together. And they were all the pieces. Seemed like I had a lot of poems for people.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I was doing that I was writing all these poems for people I'd met. And I was like, oh, this is like Jack Spicer writing to all of his friends, you know, like... He has a whole book of poems for friends. I'm like, yeah, you know what? These Frank O'Hara, Jack Spicer, David McFadden, Kenneth Koch, you know, these great, a lot of Americans I know. I love American poets. Yeah. They did it. I'm going to do it too.
Is your husband a writer too?
No, he is a fire safety. He works at a fire safety training center.
Really?
He's a facilities manager.
Huh.
He's my manager.
Yeah. I pulled this review of your last book, I Don't Feel So Good, which Jay published.
Yeah.
In the review, I should say, they invoke Lena Dunham.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess she has the capacity to overshare.
Yeah.
and I found that I'm not saying you overshared, but I mean, you say stuff in this book that I probably wouldn't say myself.
Sure. Like twice I shit myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Oh God, that line, that's a great line.
No, it's a great poem. But I mean, I probably wouldn't have written that myself. But the comparison to Dunham, and I mean, I guess she comes from a place. I mean, I love her show.
Me too.
I think it's a really funny show.
Me too. And serious too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's real life, I guess. She writes from a place where all experience is good experience. Do you find that you're the same?
Yeah.
That everything is fodder
for... Yeah, it's all, let's get it all in there, right? Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Sorry, that's a quick answer.
No, I think
it's wise, you know, just put it in there. I don't even think it's like all experience is good experience. I think all experience is just experience, you know,
yeah.
It's neither good nor bad, it is. And chances are, if you're having those experiences... however embarrassing they might be, you know, people are going to identify with them.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Have you written fiction? Have you written like a novel, say?
No, I've never written a novel. Well, actually, I'm lying. I've written two novels.
Yeah.
But I wrote them for the 3-day novel writing contest,
that contest
they have here. And I wrote one of them with Amber Dawn, the gal I'm going on tour with.
Mm-hmm.
And another one I wrote by myself. They were, you know, prose is not for me. There's just too much of it. I'd love to give it another shot, though. I'm getting older, and so I'm, you know, maybe more able to focus on long prose projects.
There's stuff in here that could be longer. I mean, there's a piece in here that I thought could be longer, and I don't think it was an anecdote that you were sharing, so it could be a memoir, say.
Yeah, okay.
Have you thought of doing that?
I have thought of doing a memoir. I've actually been asked to write a memoir, Yeah, I think I would really like to do that. My life growing up until this point, has been kind of remarkable, as all of our lives are remarkable. But I just can't believe the path that I've been so fortunate to take, and it wasn't an easy path, that is for sure. So, you know, and especially growing up out in the Fraser Valley, that landscape is so rich for me,
yeah.
And I really feel like that's a part of the world that doesn't get much airtime, and I would love to write more about that community for sure.
So what's it like living in the city now?
Oh, I love living in the city. You know,
yeah.
I love that anonymity and being close to cultural, experiences is wonderful. Having grown up in small towns, like, that's really important for me. And also, I'm pretty socked into the writing community and the art community here, so it feels real good to be able to be part of that.
In the process of writing your poems and the writing that you do, I mean, there's some introspection, I guess, that one does when you're writing a poem. Do you find that you understand yourself better, that you know yourself better?
This book, definitely.
Yeah.
This book I can see.
And what does that reveal about you, say?
I think these poems were written really in just a time in my life when I just didn't know what was happening. And I feel much more able to kind of have direction now. You know, looking at these poems, I'm like, oh, I know where I'm going from here. Like, I know, you know, I can just relax a little bit. I like the voice in this book. I think that the voice in this book is a voice I can use a lot more. And going forward, it's like every project, you kind of get a little bit closer and closer to that voice that maybe could last a long time.
Yeah.
You know, like, all my projects are a little different, and this one, I could stay there for a while.
And it's a good place, right?
I think it's a good place.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm connecting with my audience in a way that I have been working toward, but now I'm starting to actually really connect with them, so it feels good.
Well, I'm a first-time reader, and it's made me want to read your other stuff.
Yes,
so.
Awesome.
It's been really a real pleasure to meet you, and fun. It's been fun talking to you today. I appreciate you coming in to do this.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Joseph.
You're very welcome. The ElizabethBachinsky.blogspot.ca is the website for more. The book is called The Hottest Summer in Recorded History. It's published by Knightwood Editions. Its author, Elizabeth Baczynski, joined me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.